you're sick of all the abundance gurus who preach the power of mindset or financial experts who scold you for enjoying the occasional latte, then you are in the right place. The Mind Money Balance Show explores the intersection of mental health and money. We explore broader factors that impact your financial life as a whole. I'm your host, Lindsay Bryan Podvin. I'm a financial therapist, woman of color, author, and founder of the company Mind Money Balance. When I'm not nerding out on the emotional and psychological side of money, you can usually find me walking my pup and listening to an astrology podcast or curled up with a giant bowl of popcorn watching Bravo TV. This show originally airs as a video on my YouTube channel. So if you hear me say things like, as you can see here, or click this, you'll have to head over to the YouTube link that's linked in the show notes to see exactly what I'm referencing. And if you want to jump into the community, you can join in on the conversation in the comments section over on YouTube. With that, let's go. Have you ever made a budget and thought, oh, now that I have that, all of my financial worry and stress is just going to melt away, and then been pleasantly unsurprised when that didn't happen? Here's the thing. A budget is not a magic pill or a magic tool that's suddenly going to make you not have feelings about your money. However, so many people in the personal finance industry push this narrative that a budget is the magic thing that is suddenly going to make you feel better. My colleagues and I recently had the opportunity to attend FinCon and speak as panelists about this exact thing. We spoke to attendees about when a budget doesn't make you feel better and really dove into the reasons behind this. I thought it would be nice for those of you who weren't able to attend FinCon to get some of the nuggets of wisdom from myself and my colleagues who were on that panel. This year's FinCon was in New Orleans, and I had the opportunity to sit alongside some of my colleagues while being moderated by a renowned storyteller. Meredith Adams of Cactus Girl Media was our moderator and facilitator, and other folks who joined me on the panel as financial therapists were Rachel Duncan of the Money Healing Club, Asia Evans of Asia Evans Counseling and forthcoming book, But I Only Ordered Water, and Ed Combs of Healthy Love and Money. Note, while Ed Combs is a certified financial therapist and certified financial planner, he focuses on therapy-informed financial planning. So he's got a foot in both worlds, but right now his focus is on the financial planning piece. I will link Meredith, Asia, Rachel, and Ed's information in the description box. So if you are curious about their work and want to learn more, you can get in contact with them there. So anyway, the four of us sat together while Meredith moderated and facilitated these questions. And the big question is, like, why doesn't a budget just poof help you feel better? And I wanted to share just a few reasons, especially if you have started a budget or have adhered to a budget and you're still feeling stressed or overwhelmed, or maybe you're even feeling some feelings bubble up that you didn't know were there. The first reason it might not help you feel better is that you realize it solves a problem. It might help you to understand how much money is coming in and going out and give you the agency to dial down your spending or dial up your earning. But you might realize that, oh, the budget was just a scapegoat for other things going on in my life. I had it in my head that the reason that I was struggling to move my body or sleep at night or engage with my friends in a meaningful way was because my finances were out of order. And once I got a budget, then all of those other things would also kind of be fixed. And what a person might find is that it solves a part of the stressors in life, but you realize like there are also other things going on. If your sleep is still impacted, if your relationship with friends is still impacted, you may have been pinning your problems on your money when your money was a tangible problem you could point at, but there were other things in your life going on. Number two is that yes, a budget is a tool, but it's not the only financial tool. And not only that, but a budget just doesn't work for everyone. If you're new here, you know that my preferred term for budget is actually spending plan. It's not that it functions any differently. The way that I use a spending plan is I take a look at what's coming in and what's going out, and I make loose guidelines on where I want my money to go so I can spend and save in alignment with my values. For me, a budget feels really restrictive and really punitive, and it makes me feel like I'm in trouble or I'm breaking the rules, whereas a spending plan helps me to feel like I'm in charge of where my money is going. I get to dictate through a plan what I want to do financially. And there are plenty of people out there where a budget or a spending plan just isn't the tool for them. They might find that they have a good handle on their month-to-month or their day-to-day spending, but they struggle with some of the bigger picture long-term planning, things like saving up for a new car or investing in retirement. Much like other tools in therapy, it's a tool, but it's not the tool. For example, I like the practice of mindfulness, which is being aware of what is happening in the moment rather than worrying about what's to come or what already happened. But it's not a go-to tool that I use for every single time that I'm stressed out. It's just a tool I have in my toolkit that might help depending on what's going on. Similarly, a budget is a tool when it comes to dealing with our money, but it's not the only tool. Number three, it might not help you feel better if you quote-unquote fail at it or if you don't do it right. There's a lot of pressure to do things one specific way in so many areas of our life, but in particular with money, there are these rigid rules such as the 50-30-20 or the 80-20 in the world of personal finance that you have to adhere to in order to be good at budgeting, but it doesn't take into account things like the cost of living, the high cost of inflation, your unique needs. For a lot of budgets to work, they're separated into things that you need and things that you want. And when we use somebody else's rules to dictate what is a need and what is a want, it might make us feel like we're somehow doing it wrong. For example, a personal finance expert might say a massage is a want. It's not a need. It's frivolous spending. You don't need it. But if I'm a person who experiences chronic pain, I might actually need that massage in order to get through my activities of daily living and to be able to move through my world with a level of pain that I can actually tolerate. And if I'm adhering to somebody else's rule that says that a massage is a want and not a need, and I pull that massage from my spending plan or from my budget, I might feel like I'm doing a good job at budgeting, but I might physically be paying the price because I'm not investing in taking care of my physical well-being in the way that I need to. The other reason that you might feel like a failure when it comes to the budgeting is that life happens and budgets are very black and white. And if you feel like, ooh, I overspent on groceries this month, you might feel like you just weren't good at budgeting. And it might end up kind of spiraling to where you're like, I'm just not good at budgeting. I can't ever adhere to anything. And you get into that individualization and blame state of mind where you're like, I just don't have the willpower. I can't stick to anything, et cetera, et cetera. The fourth reason a budget might not help you feel better is because you're looking at it as a very static, fixed thing rather than my preference, which is as a malleable tool that shifts and changes over time. I mentioned earlier that I love the term spending plan. This is a big part of it. To me, a spending plan also gives you permission to increase your spending, decrease your spending in certain areas as needed, knowing that there are certain seasons of our life where we may have to pull back on our discretionary spending or we may need to spend more. And if we get into a habit of sticking to a budget for 2 months or 3 months, and then something changes in our life circumstance, and we by default have to change the way that we were spending, we might feel like we're failing at budgeting when in reality, we just haven't given ourselves permission to flex that budget with our needs. The fifth reason a budget might not make you feel better is that it only works if you have enough money coming in. There is no way that you can save or cut back your way to financial well-being. There is a myth in the world of personal finance that if you just stopped spending money on lattes and sneakers and TVs, then you would have plenty of money to go around. But we know that that just isn't true. And in the United States, I think we sometimes don't really take a critical look at the money that we earn and the cost of living in our country. I've talked about it before and I will probably talk about it again, but we have such a thin social safety net and we have such an emphasis in our country on the importance of bootstrapping and hard work, but we forget that even if you work full time with a job that pays minimum wage, you're still going to be struggling financially. So this idea that so many old school personal finance experts say that is just cut back, if you have a job, you'll be able to make ends meet, just isn't true. There is an organization that I adore called Living Wage, where they crunch data every single year, countywide and statewide across the United States that shows how much minimum wage is compared to what a living wage is. The way that they define it is as such, quote, "The living wage calculation is the hourly rate that an individual in a household must earn to support his or herself and their family. The assumption is that the sole provider is working full time," unquote. The minimum wage does not shift whether you are single or partnered, whether you have kids or not. It's the same number across the board. But what this calculator does is take a look at how much minimum wage is compared to what an adult would need to survive and pay for all of their needs versus what two working adults would need to survive versus working adults with kids. Like, they have all of these differentials. So there is a big difference between the living wage and the minimum wage. I pulled up my state where I live in Michigan just to get a sense of the living wage compared to minimum wage, and it's pretty shocking. At the time of this recording, the minimum wage is $10.10. For an adult with zero children in Michigan, you would need to earn $16.27 per hour just to make ends meet. So this idea that we can just save our way out of poverty is a lie. Even if you have a budget, that isn't going to make a difference if you're working a minimum wage job. Now, let's say you're an adult and you have one child, the living wage shoots up to $36.81. So we have to be mindful that when we are telling people budget, 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 and that's going to help you move the needle, that we actually have to take into consideration that the cost of living is so expensive here. And even for people who are fully employed with full-time jobs earning the government's allowable minimum rate, there is a big difference between the minimum wage and what you actually need to survive. If you are loving today's episode and want more, you can inquire about bringing me in to speak at your or to your organization. Simply head to mindmoneybalance.com/speaking to get in touch. I've tailored presentations for professional development days at regional healthcare organizations, personal finance content creators at large conferences, and financial self-care for employee resource groups. Reach out and let's start talking about what could be beneficial for your workplace or conference needs. Again, that's mindmoneybalance.com/speaking. Back to the episode. So I pulled up my state, which is in the middle of the country. I'm deep in the Midwest. I also wanted to pull up what it would look like in some of the bigger metropolitan areas. And what we know about the bigger metropolitan areas is they tend to be more expensive to live in. In Austin, Texas, the minimum wage is $7.25, and an adult with zero children needs to earn $18.15 to be considered living wage. In the New York metro area, the minimum wage is $14.20. And an adult with zero children would need to earn $22.51 per hour in order to earn a living wage. And that jumps up to $44.20 for an adult with a child. And it gets even more expensive when you move to the West Coast. In the San Francisco metro area, the minimum wage is $15.15. The living wage for an adult with zero children is $23.72, and it jumps to $50.88 per hour that would need to be earned for one adult with one child. Needless to say, it is not about just saving, saving, saving. It's also that we need to be earning more and we need to be advocating for higher living wages instead of just this idea of minimum wage. Number six is that there is no done when it comes to money. I think a lot of people have it in their head that if they have a budget and they adhere to it, check, they don't have to think about money again. But unfortunately, that's just not the way that it works. We have to engage with money throughout the duration of our lives, whether we are earning it, spending it, loaning it, saving it, investing it. A budget is just one piece of all of the different things that we have to take care of financially. So you might not feel better after you create and adhere to a budget because you realize, like, whew, I got that one thing down, but I have other things that I also have to deal with. And finally, number seven is that money is emotional. And when you engage with money, whether it's a tool like a budget or something else, you're going to have some feelings come up. You might experience anxiety, worry, embarrassment, overwhelm, survivor guilt, excitement, curiosity. Those are all things that are to be expected when we engage with our money. And a budget doesn't mean that the only thing that you will feel is good or accomplished or content or happy. It can also bring up all of these different emotions. So if you have ever tried a budget thinking like, oh, this is going to make me feel better, and it hasn't, those are the 7 different reasons that my peers and I came up with about why a budget might not help you to feel better, and to help you normalize it and understand that you're not alone. A budget is a great tool, but it's not the only tool in your toolkit to help you engage with money, especially when it comes to dealing with the emotional side of money. You might need more than just these financial tools. I think it helps to reflect on your relationship with money, your money story, all of these different things that impact why we do what we do with money. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please do me a favor and rate and review this podcast on your favorite podcast player. This quick but meaningful action helps to support the show and helps others discover it too. I love connecting with my listeners, so if something resonated, take a screenshot of the episode and tag me over on Instagram at MindMoneyBalance. This podcast simply wouldn't be possible without the help of others. I want to thank RJ Basillo, who edits this podcast, and Liberty Sales, who helps market the show to help people who need it find it. The cover art and episode art design is by Jenny H. Design. Disclaimer: everything on this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Neither the host or guests are rendering legal, financial, accounting, mental health, investing, medical, or other professional advice. If you want professional help, please seek it out.